Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writer's Book Club. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit. This week we're excited to bring to you J.C. Catlin, who lives in Tampa, Florida. He enjoys regular fishing trips and used to write a monthly column for the New Tampa Star magazine and also pens mystery suspense novels. He also maintains a blog about the art of spinning a nail-biting, edge-of-your-seat mystery yarn. He is the author of four books, The Designated Survivor, Prey of Desire, The Cypress Tree, and 21 Dares. Welcome, JC.
Thank you.
We're so excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here as well. I sure appreciate it.
Oh, good. So first of all, let's just get started with a little bit of background. You used to write for the New Tampa Star magazine. How did that transition into writing novels, or was that just something that you did on the side?
That was something that I did on the side. It's all about who you know, and I knew some of the editors for the Tampa Star magazine, and so I'm sure they liked my writing style, so that's why I got the monthly column, but it also goes back to, you know, you got to know the right people, too.
Yeah, right.
What kind of column was it that you wrote?
It was actually a tech column. I would write about apps and websites. So I would usually do 5 or 10 websites that have a theme. So, you know, there'd be like a birthday theme or, you know, something. Every week it had, or every month had some type of theme.
Oh, I love that. That would be, that'd actually be quite an interesting blog or a piece. To a column. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, and I do have a blog, but it's a home building blog, so that's not as much interesting.
That's your real job, right? That's what you do for a living. Yeah, that sounds fun. So what attracted you to sort of writing in this genre? So talk a little bit about your writing novels, what you do with that.
Well, it all goes back to the 1970s when I was a little kid, and I would read the Encyclopedia Brown books. And I loved Encyclopedia Brown, and I would write Encyclopedia Brown stories. And Encyclopedia Brown, I don't know if people really are familiar with him nowadays, but he was a nerdy, smart kid, and there was always some kind of mystery going on, and he would solve the mystery, and it really wasn't murders, because it's a children's book series, but it would be like a kid would come to school for show and tell, and he had a sword, and the sword was inscribed, you know, 1800 BC, and Encyclopedia Brown would say, well, I know you're lying, because they wouldn't inscribe it with BC on it if it was really bad.
Hey, well, he's a smart kid.
Yeah, exactly. And he had several friends and stuff, and that really inspired me to write. I wanted to write murder mysteries, mysteries where, you know, the big surprise at the end of who did it.
Wow, and how did that develop through your life then, that desire?
Well, I've always been writing. Back in high school, I wrote a school play, which was kind of cool. And in my 20s, I wrote a couple of books, and then actually got signed on with Cambridge Literary Agency, but they weren't able to sell any of them. And so then that contract expired, and I got kind of sidetracked with home building for 10 years. And then about 2003... I really wanted to kind of start getting back into writing. And
was there something that sparked that, or was it just a desire that you kept underneath wraps and you're ready to go?
I was writing a little bit. I joined some writers groups. I was going back to conferences and everything, and because I really hadn't done much for 10 years, and then, you know, and then started just kind of getting back into the industry. I reconnected with Kim Harris, and we talked, and she was a published author by that time. And so she was a big inspiration and motivation for me. Then, you know, I started putting myself out there.
Cool. You know,
The Designated Survivor, which is really a novella. It's pretty short. And I got that out there, started indie publishing, and got a lot of good feedback. You know, it's funny. I've got fans now who just are very supportive and very excited and you know, stay in touch with them and stuff. And then you also have anti-fans.
The haters, that's what they're called.
But boy, they just hate you.
Yeah, don't worry, we're authors, we know exactly what you're talking
about. Well, yeah, it also means that you've done something right if you've got haters, that you've created emotion. Some are good, some are good.
That's right, you don't want indifference. Either hate me or love me.
Oh, absolutely. But I hear from both sides, so it's interesting.
Well, that is interesting.
How do you deal with that? Do you have a way? Do you read reviews and things like that, or do you just not go there?
Yeah, sometimes I read reviews, and especially if I'm feeling kind of down or in the blahs with writing, you know, at Writerback, then it really helps to go read the good reviews, not necessarily the bad ones, but it does help to go read the good reviews, and then I'm on Facebook, so people contact me on Facebook quite a bit, and it's funny how some people seem like they're, you know, a few people act like they're angry, you know, I mean, it's just a murder mystery. I don't know how it has such a big impact on your life, but it's funny, you know, some people will seem angry.
That's crazy.
I hope you like the next book. But.
No, that's the best attitude. And the reality is, if they're angry, it's because they believed it enough to be engaged in it, to be angry about it. And so I know that doesn't help how you feel, but it actually means that you wrote a good story, whether they liked it or not. You're always going to get people who have different opinions, you know?
Exactly. And the thing that they don't like about it is the same thing that other people love about it. So, yeah, it's all a big circle there.
It is. That's a good attitude to have. Suzanne always tells us, you know, find your readers and, you know, your tribe or whatever, and the people that love your work are the ones that are your tribe. So,
Those are the people you're writing for, you know. Even J.K. Rowling has haters. J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you know, and talking about that, if you do, this is something that I did when Prey of Desire came out. When I released The Designated Survivor, my first one, it's pretty much just friends and family that read it and paid any attention to it. But when Prey of Desire came out, I started branching out into people I didn't know. You know, it actually had a little bit of momentum. When I did get bad reviews, one of the things that helped me back then, because it just shocked me, I was like, what? You mean, I just wasn't prepared for it. But, you know, I went on Dean Koontz's books and read some of the ones, because he's my favorite author,
and I read
some of the one stars, and I was like, well, you know, if people can absolutely hate, you know, some of his books, then, you know, then that's just part of life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a good tip for authors, to find the authors that you respect and go see what people have said about their work. Big published authors that have tons of publicity and everything else, there's still people that don't like their work. That's actually a kind of a really positive way to look at the negative reviews.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought it helped me. It helped me get over that hump. And now I don't really think that much about it.
Well, good. That's smart.
Right.
That's really smart.
Now, you said most of your books are either in Texas or in Florida. Is there a reason for that? Do you just like the landscape, or is that just because you know those areas well? Is there a particular reason?
Yeah, because I know those areas. I grew up in Texas, and I've lived in Florida since 2000, so I'm familiar with those two areas. I'd love to be familiar with Colorado, but I just don't know enough about it to have a book set there.
Yeah, it's a lot of extra research.
I was going to say, when you make a million, then you can go research in Colorado.
There you go.
I'll be writing books in Australia. I'll have to go research Australia.
Now you're talking.
I keep saying that. We're going to find these great places that we want to set a book and then use the research card, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Thing that's tax deductible.
That's right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I want to switch gears a little bit, because you've got great covers, and I actually watched your trailer, The Designated Survivor, which freaked me out. It was so good.
Oh,
so tell us about your marketing. It's really good, KJ. You need to go see it.
I do.
Tell us about your marketing, and I mean, and that part of it. How did you put your covers together? Because the indies were always looking at that. And who did your trailers for you?
I did those trailers myself.
Oh my gosh, you got a job right there.
Yeah, you're hired.
Yeah, I did those trailers myself, and I didn't make one for 21 Dares because they've had such little impact on my visibility. So it's a whole lot of work with very little return. And I might make one for 21 Dares just because I enjoy it. But yeah, they just had no books didn't seem to have any impact.
Isn't that interesting? I've heard other authors say that, and that's partly why I haven't spent a whole lot of time trying to get a trailer done. I like how they look, but if you're saying it doesn't even affect the sales, it is a whole lot of work for not much benefit.
Exactly.
Now,
and if you look at the views on it, there's not a whole lot of views, you know, on those trailers on YouTube.
I wonder if it's too much time. People are in such a rapid world, you know, they want to just read it quickly or look at it quickly. It would just take too much time to go watch a trailer.
That's possible. Or I think, too, the marketing is kind of disconnected, because if Amazon had the trailer actually on the page for the book, that would make a difference. But
I think that would make a difference, too. I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. That would make a huge difference.
Just from YouTube to Amazon, it's tough.
Hey, I have an idea. Write a blog that's connected to your Amazon account. Do your blogs go up onto Amazon when you write a blog? Does it come through your Amazon page on Amazon?
It sure does. It does on my author page, yes.
So what you want to do maybe is do a blog that has the trailer in it and then have that be so that it comes up on the Amazon.
And they are posted on the Amazon author page, because you can upload them to Amazon.
It's okay.
You have to go to the actual author page. I don't know that many people go to the author page.
Yeah, that's true. But you could send them there if you put it on your Twitter bio or something where
that's what I just did.
I have to be honest, I always look at trailers. That's just me. Because I get a real feel for the book with a trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you get an idea of the story, you know, storyline, so you go, oh, you know what, that's too sci-fi for me. Or, oh, that's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I love the premise of that book, just watching the trailer. It was I already was on the edge of my seat of like this woman, and I'm like, so tell us a little bit about how did you come up with that story? That was your first one, right?
The Designated Survivor was my first one, and it was a story that, it was actually a piece of one of the books that I wrote in my 20s that I kind of broke out and just kind of developed that as a standalone. And it was really just kind of my first jump back into getting exposure, and I had worked so hard to become traditionally published that I thought, you know, I'm just going to go the indie route. And I had gone on some interviews with agents at conferences and stuff, and they kept wanting to know about my author platform. You know, they're, well, how many email subscribers do you have? How many people are following your blog? You know, they were more interested in that than in the book. So I thought, well, if I go indie, then I can start building that email list. I can build my author platform, and then, you know, in 5, 6, 7 years, then I can come back with another book and say, okay, here's my book, here's my followers, and then I think traditional publishers will be more interested.
Totally. So either way now, whether you're indie or whether you're traditional, you have to have a platform, and that's what I don't think a lot of authors get.
Yeah, it's crucial.
Absolutely.
So, but just for our audience, tell them a little bit about the premise of that book.
Of The Designated Survivor?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about a girl named Tess who has been separated from her child, and she is in prison. She breaks out of prison, and she is on her way to go get her daughter. So she hitchhikes to Sarasota, and a man picks her up on the road, and the whole book is about their road trip back to Sarasota. And she starts to think he's killed his wife, and the body's in the trunk.
Oh, no.
I know, isn't that kind of freaky?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
But she can't go to the law, obviously, because she's out of prison, right?
Yeah.
So I just feel that you just set up a really, a very scary, like, scenario right there. It sounds like it would be a great movie, to be honest with you.
That's what I was thinking.
Look at the reviews I get. That's a common, this needs to be a movie.
Yeah, you've got that constant, like, fear, you know, that would be kind of, that which is, I think, is what we like to see in movies, so,
Not used to it.
You know, Intensity by Dean Koontz is the book that has probably most impacted me as far as my writing, and I always aspire to write something that would be as, you know, as just a page-turner as Intensity was for me.
I've read some of his, and I can handle it to a point, and then I get really scared, so... It depends on the book. I had to put him down because I was not sleeping.
Well, Intensity's a scary one. I mean, it is, and some of his gets kind of into fantasy or a little bit of horror, But that intensity is about a serial killer and a girl trapped in the RV with him, and it just you just cannot put it down. I mean, it is just it is to me the ultimate page turner.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, see, when you get into women being kidnapped and something about that hits too close to home. I can't read
that. Too close to home, that's right.
But I do like the way he writes. He's very suspenseful. Mm-hmm. There was one he wrote that was I can't remember the title of it, but I want to find it for my son because I think he would like it. It was like all these people had a weird experience, and then they all end up at a diner, and they realize it was some extraterrestrial, you know, thing. Do you know? Are you familiar with that one?
I
don't know. It was really well written. It's kind of terrifying though. You think about what could have been with the aliens and all that kind of stuff, but. But yeah, that's really good. So that was one of your inspirations for writing the suspenseful stories. His aren't necessarily mysteries. How did you get into the mystery element?
Well, I've always liked mysteries. I love Mary Higgins Clark. I've pretty much read all of her books, and she's a pretty big influence as well. And I've always just liked that genre. I've always read mysteries, and it just draws me.
That's cool.
And I like puzzles. You know, they're fun to create and they're fun to read.
Cool.
I want to ask you too. So when you do a mystery, we've talked to some other mystery writers where they have to, like one of them writes where there's a lot of lying and off-scene information. So she has two different things. One is the actual story of what people are saying. The other piece is what's actually happening off screen. Do you have like a system for coming up with the mystery, or is it more seat of your pants?
No, it's definitely not seat of your pants. It's mine are very heavily outlined, and that other author is absolutely correct. I will write scenes that aren't intended for the book, just intended for my understanding in writing the book. So that way, because there are things that happen off the page, and you have to be consistent. If you're inconsistent, and it just completely shatters the illusion.
Yeah. It all has to come together and make sense of why these things happen. It can't just be coincidence or whatever. You've got to have a purpose.
So how interesting your process in doing that. Do you actually start at the end of where you're going to end up and work backwards? How do you do that when you're doing this kind of, when you're working all that, you know?
I guess you could say that, because usually I do come up with the murder, you know, so to speak, you know, with that actual plot. And then I start fitting characters into it, because you have your protagonist and your antagonist, of course, but the red herring characters have to be interesting and have to also kind of raise doubt or throw the reader off, you know, oh, okay, this is the murderer, but really they have their own set of issues. It's just not the issue of who murdered the person.
Ooh.
And if I don't write, they're not really cozies. I do have ideas in my head for traditional murder mysteries where the person is killed at the beginning and then the amateur sleuth is just figuring it out. Mine are a little bit more suspenseful with danger going on throughout. I hear suspense more than I do mystery, but it is definitely a mystery.
Yeah. So you've woven in the suspense. It sounds like you're really good at that from what you're talking about.
And I hope I continue to get better. You know, it's one of those, I hope that I'm evolving.
Well, I'm sure you are. I find, you know, most of the authors that we talk to, they start at one process, and then as they start to get better at it, they change how they write to get more efficient and to get better, and then to develop the places they think they're really good. So I've noticed that in mine. And Suzanne, you probably as well. There's things that
totally. I'm much more of an outliner than I used to be.
Yeah, same here. Absolutely. And, you know, we don't even write the mystery part. To me, it's like, it kind of blows my mind a little bit, because I think it's hard enough to write, you know, you've got the plot and all the different characters you're trying to keep the plot going, but to have like this whole underlying story that isn't even in the story to figure out too, that's like stressing me out. It's a whole other thing to write. Yeah, I know. But like, you have to write a chapter that isn't even in the book just so you know what's going on. I was just like, oh my gosh, that's different. That's very different.
Yeah, that is different.
Okay, JC, tell us your latest novel. It's called 21 Dares, and it was just released. Tell us about the premise of that book.
21 Dares is about a college girl who is just turning 21. She's had a very violent episode in her past, which has greatly affected her and her family, and her father has kind of sheltered her. So now she's off to college for the first time. Her friends throw her a birthday party. They play 21 Dares. And her past comes back to haunt her. So everything kind of catches up with her. and Game of 21 Dares turns deadly.
Ooh. Is this horror? What's the genre?
It's suspense mystery. It's not, I don't consider them horror.
Okay, so it doesn't go that far in the, okay.
But a couple of characters do die, and then the mystery of it is, A, who's the killer, and how it is connected to her past.
Her past, right. Ooh, that sounds really good. How do you come up with these ideas? They're so good.
My brain, I'm just always jotting notes down and thinking about things. And, you know, we talked about outlines, and I've got 24, 25 book outlines.
Get out.
I need to, you know, I can come back to and write. And then I'll think of something, I'll go, oh, that would be perfect for this story, and I'll go jot it down on that story. I'd be much faster writer if I could focus on one story at a time, but my brain just doesn't work that way.
Squirrel. But, you know, it sounds like, even though it sounds like you're describing yourself as being a little bit scattered, the fact that you have it organized enough to be in these different stories, like I have a million ideas, but they're just like everywhere. You know what I mean? It doesn't go anywhere. To be able to organize enough to, oh, this goes in this story, and then go put it there so that when you're ready to write that, I mean, think about that for an agent or a publisher to know the author already has some books out and has 21 other things in line. That's amazing.
Yeah, and then at that point, you could probably not have to have your 9-to-5, and you could actually write this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. If you had somebody picking it up, absolutely, because you've got all the ideas ready. And if you put pieces into it, that each one would need to be like started from scratch, where you have to come up with the ideas. Wow.
Ideas will hit me, and then I'll go insert them. And then and once I really start digging into one story, then it's just kind of a snowball. I just, you know, I just run, and I become totally focused on that story until I get it done, and then my brain just shuts off on that story and starts moving on to the other. But I still have to edit and send it to the editor, and she sends it back to me with changes and corrections, and my brain just doesn't want
it. It wants the new stuff. I'm kind of like that too.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's an innovator, though. That's the innovative mind. You want the new, the thrill of the new item, whatever it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where my brain is. It's not in about correcting, you know, word choices on the novel I finished last month.
Right, right. It's the creative process, and you're not as creative when you're picking words. It is creative, but it's not the same level at all.
Exactly.
Especially with the intensity of what you're writing too. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so you have a very creative way to get people onto your subscribers, your email, through the 21 Birthday Challenge. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, let me back up just a little bit. On my website, you can sign up for a free book, which is The Designated Survivor, and I've built my email list with that. So, and it's been very successful. So I was thinking, well, what's something new that I could add to get more subscribers? And so I thought, well, I don't finish the 21 Dare list in the book. So, you know, it goes up to like number 16. So I thought, well, if readers are interested, you know, they can sign up to get the entire list. And so that's been very successful, too. I've had a lot of new subscribers wanting the full list of 21 Dares.
Wow.
Great idea. Because if they're engrossed in the novel, I mean, then they're going to want to know. That's a great way to pull people in.
It is.
I thought, well, you know, I can't imagine anyone, you know, maybe a couple of people will want that. But I've been surprised. I mean, it's been really, really good.
Wow, that is creative, too. Just the twist on, instead of just here's a new book or a new story, it gives them something from the one they just read.
It's extra from the story.
It is.
It's kind of fun.
Reminds me a little bit of Nicole Wagoneer. She had a very giant cliffhanger of her book and then gave them the rest of the beginning of the next book, but the kind of the resolution of that on her website. So it's a very different way of connecting back with people that, you know, someone who's read your work and then they're now on your website and they're getting on your email list, and it's a way to pull them into your whole empire, you know?
And it's organic, too. These are people that liked your story, liked your writing enough to sign up on your website to get more information or, you know, get more, you know, another story. And so it's a very clean, a very positive list, because a lot of people do promotions, you know, sign up on my email list and I'll give you a Kindle Fire. But they don't know you. You know,
yeah,
they don't
yeah, yeah.
they'll know your work. So you email them and they may or may not be interested.
Right. You know, that's a good point. So that's what we had someone on. I can't remember who it was, Suzanne. Maybe you can help me. But they were talking about the conversions. Oh, it's because Gisela. You're talking about, you know, you have 2,000 people on your list, but really only 5% interact with you. Or you have 200 people on your list that really want to be on your list. So when you send something out, those are the people that are going to go buy it. So it's, you know, it is
a fact.
Yeah, exactly. It isn't necessarily about how many. It's the depth and the quality of your list. So it sounds like you're tackling that. That's brilliant. That's a great strategy. I'm thinking now that you're throwing that idea out there, I have a pretty big cliffhanger on stealing time. And then I have the second book that follows up and gives you kind of a little rest of it. I'm wondering if I could have a newsletter sign up where they get the first three chapters of the second book that resolves some of that.
Oh, that's a great idea.
See what you've done, JC. You've inspired me.
That's good.
Yeah.
We have to depend on each other.
Yeah. That's so right. Would you like to subscribe to my email list? And I want your 21 dares. My birthday's coming up. Maybe we'll have to try some of them.
Not the ones when people kill each other, right?
No, not. What, JC?
I can't believe you're turning 21.
I know.
Where's mine?
Yeah, right. That was a long time ago. All right. Give us an idea of your social media presence. What do you enjoy doing? Where are you? What kind of things do you do on those different platforms?
About a year ago, I was on a lot of stuff and was trying to maintain a lot of stuff. And I whittled it right back down to Facebook. Facebook's primarily what I use. And I may get into Twitter at some point, but I still haven't. Facebook has just been really good for interacting with people and just keep that line of communication open.
Right. Okay, so Facebook is your main one.
Yeah, and in fact, at the moment, it's about my only one.
Do you do Facebook ads, JC?
Not yet, but I'm going to. I've got I'm in an online writers group and several of my friends on that, and I are about to start exploring that and see what we can do there.
Yeah, we've had good luck with that, I think.
Yeah, one thing that I just found out, and I bet everybody knows this but me, but it's like when I was doing my Facebook ad, you know, you can sometimes get like 1,000 people that will like it. You know, it's amazing sometimes in the right kind of ad. I didn't realize you can then go in and then invite those people to like the page. I didn't realize that. So that was great. It really boosted my numbers when I went in and invited. You know, if you have 1,000 people, maybe, you know, out of those 1,000, you know, 30 or 40 people or 50 people sign up to be on. It's great, though. So you've got 50 people you wouldn't have had like the page, you know?
That is on my list of things I'm going to do this quarter. Because between the Cypress Trap and 21 Dares, I started my email list. And now between 21 Dares and the Hangman, which is my next book, I'll be learning Facebook ads and adding that to my another bullet in my holster, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a good Texas expression.
Exactly.
I like how you threw that in there. Ah, that's cool. All right, so tell us, so you just do Facebook. Are you on the other ones? Because Suzanne and I have used Twitter to great success at boosting your sales and your ranking on Amazon and stuff. I'm wondering, what is it that's keeping you from wanting to get into Twitter?
I think it's a time factor. You know, it's just, yeah. It's one of those things. I need to learn it. I need to understand it. I need to nurture it. And it's been, because I signed up for a lot of things, and didn't spend the time to get it moving.
Yeah, it does.
That's a big part of it. And then there's so many of the promotion companies that already have a Twitter following. So if I need to promote my book, then, you know, they'll send it to their Twitter followers. So that's, you know, that's been a band-aid until I can, you know, put my time into
Twitter. Get it figured out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've used some really good tools that make Twitter so much easier. Next week, we'll have somebody from Buffer that's on, and it's a tool to help you schedule your social media posts. And also, we use Hootsuite, and it's been so much easier where you schedule your posts, but then it gives you time to just interact with the people. And I think what's so time-consuming, really, is the posting of the material. So if you get that kind of set up, the maintenance part where you're actually connecting with the readers, which is where I think is very valuable, especially for you, would then be like the easier fun part. So I would encourage you to get onto Twitter because, I mean, I notice the days that I don't tweet or I forget to put it up or I have less tweets, my ranking on Amazon tanks. And when I leave it up,
That's
so I see an immediate impact and I would urge you to get on
there. I think particularly with such great covers and with a great trailer and with great premise, I think you would be very popular on Twitter.
I do too.
Well, thank you. You know what? You're not the first person to tell me that, so I need to start taking that advice and just jump in feet first.
Yeah. Well, if you want to talk offline, I can give you a couple of easy pointers and help you get set up or whatever. Just whatever would be helpful to kind of get you over this. Because some of it is like you just get like this little barrier. It's like it's too complicated. It's too hard or whatever. And once you pass that and realize what it is, it's really not that hard. And when you get the concept of how it works and how it's going to help your sales, you know, you see a benefit to it other than just annoying one more thing you have to do.
Yeah.
Well, cool. What are you working on now?
About Hangman and talking about my next book.
Yes. What is?
A mystery. You know, and it's funny. I've been working on this one for 3 years.
Wow.
And I've written The Cypress Trap and 21 Dares on breaks while working on this one novel.
Oh, my goodness.
It all comes back to the puzzle. All the pieces have to line up. And I'm pretty close to being done and satisfied with it, so I'm expecting a January release for it.
Oh, that's exciting. Tell us what it's about.
It's about a girl who had left her hometown. She gets a phone call that her childhood friend had died, and she goes home for the funeral and then starts to suspect she was murdered.
Oh.
And no one's really listening to her, and she thinks that the town sheriff who had jilted her at the altar, which is why she left the hometown in the first place, she starts to suspect him as the murderer, but no one believes her because they think, well, it's just sour grapes. She's just mad because
no one
will listen to her.
I like the tangled web you weave there. That's pretty good.
Oh, thank you. I've been working on it for 3 years. It's just been hard to get all the pieces to fit right.
Yeah. Well, that will probably mean it's going to be one of your best books because to spend that much time on it, I mean, I took a really long time on Stealing Time, and I feel like there's so many more layers and pieces in there because of that, you know?
Well, I hope that it's more of an adult book because the other ones are definitely young adult. And by being an adult book, I don't mean, you know, graphic sex and violence and everything, but just a more adult theme, perhaps.
Right. Well, it sounds really good. I hope it goes well for your January release. Are you going to do a trailer for that, or is that just get the book out?
If I do another trailer, it'll be for 21 Dares. I'll have to think about that, what I want to do there, if I want to spend the time on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And, so it's right now, it's not the priority.
Yeah.
But I love trailers. I really want to do one.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're pretty good at it, from what Suzanne said.
Well, thank you. Yeah, my favorite part was in the Prey of Desire trailer with the head turns with the, I don't know if you remember or not, but in the restaurant, they're all sitting there because it's all pictures.
Right.
And I get the head to turn.
Oh, I didn't see that one, but I will definitely go see that one now.
Suzanne's going to be scared.
It's all still shots, but the head moves on one of the still shots.
Yeah. Ooh, creepy.
Well, they reckon within, I think, 2 years, 70% of what will be on Twitter will be videos. So maybe your trailers will take off then.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's just ahead of the curve a little bit.
Yeah.
And if there's a way that you can get a Facebook ad with the trailer, I think that would really drive some traffic, you know?
Yeah, they don't do that, but that would be really cool, wouldn't it?
That's an interesting thought. That's a real interesting thought, yeah. That would give some purpose to them, because at the moment they just sit on YouTube.
Yeah, that's true. Well, cool. Suzanne, do you think we're ready for the lightning round?
I am. How about you, JC? You ready to be lightning rounded?
Yeah, let's do it. So this is where I win the car, right?
This is where you win the car.
Yeah. And I have to say, it's kind of an appropriate lightning round since that Hurricane Hermine just went over Tampa where you are the other day. So.
Yeah, Hermine was just had an upset stomach or something. I don't know.
She beat up Tampa. Yeah, it sounds like it was a really rough night on Thursday. Okay, Suzanne, am I doing this?
Yep.
All right. Okay, all right. So, JC, what is your favorite band or artist?
You know, that changes a lot. I'm going to right now say...
Sing it.
I'm not going to win a car, am I?
Nope.
Drunk on a Plane.
Oh, Drunk? Is that Snakes on a Plane?
that's a funny movie.
That is a funny movie.
You know, I was expecting author questions.
We threw him for a loop.
Yeah, we like to throw you right over the loop.
How about pass, and it'll come to you at the end, probably, simply.
Well, I think I know who you mean. You talk about that really great video they did where they were all on the plane. You talk about that one?
Yeah, Dirk's Bentley. That's what I'm thinking of.
It must be country.
You go. See, it came to you in the end.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, I've been way into Dirk's Bentley lately.
Is that country?
It is. It's country.
That's why I've never heard of it. I grew up.
I'll tell you what. You introduced me to Twitter, and I will introduce you to country.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, there you go.
Left coast or right coast?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely East Coast. Yeah. I don't think I've ever even visited the West Coast.
Well, see, there you go.
So well, you missed out. We're cute over here. It's a nice place.
We're cute over here. But you could say the left coast of Florida. That's where Tampa
is. That's true. There you go. But,
yeah, you leave it open a little bit there. What is your favorite writing spot?
You know, this is funny. It's at the mall. I love to go to the food court at the mall, put my laptop out, and just watch people.
Get
out. Oh, my gosh. I would never think of writing there. That's hysterical.
That is cool. So what do you get? You get, like, food and a coffee or something?
Yeah, you know, whatever. I just sit at the food court and work on my book, and, you know, you listen to people walk around and see interesting people, and, you know, for whatever reason, that you're by yourself and you're alone, yet you're with a lot of people. It's an interesting atmosphere.
I think you're an extrovert. That would be an extrovert thing to do, where you're focusing alone, but you were surrounded by people.
I'm an introverted extrovert.
Well, there you go. Okay, so are you a pantser or a plotter? I think we've already talked about this one.
Definitely a plotter.
Yeah, you have to for your genre, especially. If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
Boy, you know, I would love to be back in the Old West, maybe the 1800s.
Cool.
But, you know, honestly, I'd rather go forward in time. I'm more interested in colonizing Mars.
Oh, my goodness. You want to be one of those guys? My friend who lives here, her son wants to be one of the people that's sent to Mars and never comes back. I'm like, oh, my God. I would be devastated. You can't even, like, send him a care package, you know?
Yeah, well, the technology will catch up.
So it
would be tough without that infrastructure. You know, we got a city on Mars, then
it'll be. And people and like small things like air and water, you know.
You need those. You really need those.
A little bit of food, you know. Just important things in life. That's interesting. So you're a futurist.
Yeah, I'm definitely a futurist. If I have to go in the past, I would love to visit the Old West. I'd love to visit the 50s, too.
Yeah.
So, but
good choice.
But really, I'm more ahead.
Ahead. That's cool. One of the fun things about being a time travel writer is that I can go to any of those places that I feel like going.
Exactly.
You know, and I have. And it's fun because each book I find a place that I'm just fascinated by and I get to go study it and be there and imagine what would happen. And
bring all the readers along with you.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm sure that's what the people do that really like the future. That's why they write the Space Odyssey travel kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I have a different skew of it. Okay, so if you had a superpower, what would you want it to be?
You know, probably X-ray vision. I always thought that would be interesting.
Ah, and what would you do with this special skill?
You know, it's always interesting to see what's going on in the next room. You know, you're at work,
right.
And they close the doors, and you think, what are they talking about?
See, as a writer, that's very useful.
Yeah, exactly. Put my glasses at the edge of my nose, and my little ray beams come out of my eyes.
That's cool. Who or what inspires you?
In my real life or as an author?
And whatever inspires you to write or to, you know, the stories that you create?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, my nieces, you know, really inspire me. They're kind of my biggest fans, and my book's a little bit over their heads. But my niece back in Texas said she really, really wants to be in one of my books. And I said, well, how about I just dedicate one to you?
Yeah, the books don't go... You don't want to put her through what your books are about.
Exactly.
Oh, that's cute.
So, but all my nieces are so supportive. They're so into it.
I love that. That's great. Which book do you wish you had written?
Oh, that's Intensity. I mean, Intensity is a great book. I'll tell you a book I would love. I wish I wrote some of Sidney Sheldon's books. If Tomorrow Comes. I mean, that to me was just a phenomenal book. Or Master of the Game.
Yeah.
Yeah, the And I don't think Sidney Sheldon gets the credit he deserves. I mean, he was a really good storyteller.
He is.
And yeah, it was romantic suspense, but those were good stories.
Yeah, he did a great job. Yeah, absolutely. What is your favorite author writing moment so far?
Probably I was at a writer's conference in St. Augustine, Florida, and Peter Cook was at the, he was across from me, in a booth across from me, and most incredible. It was just really cool to be at a writer's conference, and I'm selling my books on one side, and he's selling his books on the other.
That's when you know you made it, right?
Well, I don't know about making it, but I got placed on that floor in a very nice spot.
Yeah, that worked out. Who'd you pay for that?
and I think we all paid the same. Like, it was just coincidence. Yeah. I was really fortunate.
Yeah. What's one thing you wish you'd been told about being a writer?
To pay attention to the marketing. I think I wish I'd started my email list back with my first book and not my third.
That's good advice. You're making me wish I had too, but that's good. Well, that's all I have for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess I don't win the car since I couldn't remember Bert Simmons.
We'll forgive you. It's a beautiful car too, isn't it, Suzanne? Do you want to describe?
Yeah, it's a 1991 Ford Explorer. It doesn't work. So you have to come get it.
Go to Seattle from Florida to get it.
Have you got AAA?
How's the 8-track in it?
Oh, it's good.
The 8-track. That's hilarious. Yeah, this has been a whole lot of fun having you on the program, JC.
Oh, thank you.
Please join us next week where we air a exciting update from our best social media tips winner. I'm not going to say who that is yet because we are announcing all of the winners from our podcast awards this Friday. And we hope you join us at the party. Check for the links on our Facebook page at Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.